What's up, humans? Welcome to the Human Music Podcast. I'm Luke Rain. My co-hosts are Tesco and Rip Kinney, and we are all music producers, artists, and producer coaches. This show is where we discuss all things music production and interview amazing creatives about their origins, their process, and whatever else comes up. This week is episode 118, Missing Links on Music Mentorship and Taking Feedback. Missing Links is back for his second Human Music Podcast episode, so we catch up on what he's been up to since last time, including buying a house to rent as an Airbnb to subsidize being a full-time musician, the importance of finding a relationship with someone who truly supports your music career, releasing his first single as Missing Links after producing for 12 years, training with multiple music mentors, how to take feedback from mentors and from fans, celebrating the small victories, making custom QR codes for music, and much more. Find him at missinglinks.us and at instagram.com/missinglinksmusic. Those links are below, along with the song of the week, his first single, Snake Charmer. And you can check a couple of his SoundCloud DJ mixes, links to those below, and the Spotify Song of the Week playlist, where you can find that right up top along with all our other songs of the week. Now, while you're down there, make sure to check out our sponsors like Dojo TV, where you can get free producer live stream classes from the Dojo Senseis, Tesco's Patreon, where you can get access to his track feedback, private lessons, and much more, the weekly download, where you can learn from our mentor Ill Gates and his private weekly group lessons for just $20 a month, and guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. We always got thehumanmusicpodcast.com to find all the places we stream and our socials and stuff. But let's get on into this episode with Missing Links.
Hello, people of Earth. This is Tesco with Rip Kenny and Trap Jesus. And you're listening to the Human Music Podcast. Woo!
Human Music Podcast. I like it.
Hey, what's up, humans? How y'all doing? Woo. Here we go.
Yes.
Back live on Dojo TV. Feeling good about that and on time this week. Woo.
Yeah. Doing our technical difficulties.
Let's go.
Yeah, no 30 minutes late. So shouts out to anybody who might be popping in the chat on time. Surprised that we're here already. But yeah.
We were late one time. You can't be like, oh, they're always late now.
Yeah, out of 100 plus episodes.
Yeah, come on.
But hey, the important thing is we're here, and we're here with the one and only Missing Links back. Back on the podcast.
Hello.
Round two, baby.
Alex, my dude, how you been since then?
I'm so good. I have a new home. Woo. Like house. Like I bought a house.
Congrats.
And now I run an Airbnb out of it. So I actually bought it for that purpose. And so I make enough money from the Airbnb and other random bits of income that I get to just be doing music full time.
Cool.
Yeah, it's so good. Airbnb, it's a sweet gig if you can do it. Sometimes it's difficult to get the kind of income you need to be able to, like, get a loan. But there's a lot of different paths to, like, getting your hands on a house one way or another, whether it's through support from friends and family or other things. So I kind of recommend that to all musicians.
Nice.
Like, producers at least, because if you're going to be home producing anyway, it's a sweet gig.
Mm-hmm.
At least in Denver it is.
Well, congrats on the place, man. That's very exciting.
Yeah. And then this whole like corner of the house is my studio / living space. It's really nice.
Nice.
Yeah,
and
super dope. You're living the dream.
Where exactly are you at for any, you know, cool humans that are going to be traveling through your area looking for a place?
Yeah, I am in Denver. I'm actually 14 minutes from Red Rocks.
Ooh,
so, yeah, if you ever want to go to Red Rocks, we have a very party-friendly house here. For all those sorts of things. And also I want to start doing training and other stuff. I mean, I've been doing teaching and training of people here in Denver and everything, but to have this Airbnb anyway, it'd be fun to have people come out and do producer intensive with me.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah,
all right, humans, you heard the man. Get out to Denver, or if you're in Denver, get out to Missing Links spot. It's right by the rocks.
It is, and it's so beautiful here all the time.
Yeah, definitely have noticed. I've been to Colorado a couple times this year, and wow, great weather.
Every season's awesome.
Yeah.
300 days of sunshine, too. We get more sunshine than Florida.
Wow.
Sunshine State. Yeah, it's funny. Mm.
Yeah, I can't say I know what that's like.
Yeah. It is kind of a desert here, too, like a little bit. It's dry as fuck. For sure. Are we allowed to swear on this? Or is that
fuck like, no, bro. You just fucked it all up.
Yeah, oh, got it.
Hey, we got some people popping in the chat. What's up to New Maps, Mr. Mojo, and Secret Guest? What's up, guys?
Where do I get to see this chat? Is that something I get access
the
to?
Producer Dojo Discord. We got the Dojo TV live chat.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
Man,
yes
shout yes, out yes. to the chat.
Pop in there, say big up.
Wow. Big up.
Big up, chat.
Big up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to really bait Rip Kenny into saying it because he says
it. It's not hard. It's not hard.
All cool. right. So, yeah, man, you know, you've been here before. You've talked to the people. But, you know, let's give them a quick, like, rundown of who you are, how you got here, and what's been up since then.
Oh, man. Okay. So
it's
for people who don't know
origin
me at all,
story reboot.
Yeah, real quick. Music kind of like, I don't know, it saved my life multiple times, like over and over again. And like even like some of my earliest best memories are just of like music, just being the sauce, you know, like and like all that. So I did it for a long time, then I like got out of music when I was 18 for about 7 years because I thought I had to like focus on my career and stuff like that. There was a lot of psychological barriers to even pursuing music, right? And that's like kind of part of it is getting over those. To be able to just be like, actually, I can do this full time. Like I can make a life out of this. Like I don't need to get a good job. Like music is the best job.
Amen.
Right? I mean, for me, not for everybody, obviously. Like if you don't feel like you have to do music, then like,
yeah, don't save yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't just be like, yeah, I'm just going to do it because I hear it's an easy way to make money and get chicks. Because like, yeah.
You're wrong.
It is surprisingly not. I will say that my current girlfriend, who was absolutely stunning, had been over with music, but I went over with my piano playing. So kids, production, not necessarily the straightest.
And piano lessons that you shunned. You're like, I need to play guitar. And then you put that down because you were chasing girls at the middle school dance. You should have learned piano because you let the one get away.
You mean girls don't like when you camp out in your dungeon for days on end? Polishing them mixed up.
Yeah, right? Like literally.
Yeah, just like ignoring them.
News
ignoring
to
them.
Me.
They start, like,
yeah.
Kissing your neck and stuff. You're just like, baby, I'm trying to finish this edit. What are you doing?
It's not you. It's the snare, I swear.
Yeah,
they
love
that.
The snare sound is turning
me
off so hard right now. I need to fix it. I need a harder snare and then.
Yeah, girls really like to know where they are in the pecking order and that they're below music. Right.
Yeah, it's rough, man.
You gotta set expectations early. If you're committed to a life of creativity, you gotta let people know early and probably maybe like date somebody that gets it on a real level, like somebody that does something, you know.
While we're on this topic,
of their own or just gets it.
A couple things, because I've had a lot of girlfriends in my day, and I've had good girlfriends and bad girlfriends. Well, not really. I mean, like, you can enter a lot of bad relationships. I've had a lot of bad relationships. You know, it's more about being, like, a little bit of a serial monogamist and also polyamorous and stuff. So, I guess not serial monogamist, but... Anyways, I'm also 38. That's like the other thing is like people don't realize that I'm as old as I am. And so once you're my age, you've accumulated a number of relationships. But what I can tell you is that some girls, even if they're really sweet and they seem to be supporting you, will get in the way of you actually getting your work done one way or another, either intentionally or unintentionally. And some girls are just like rocket fire for music and for your creativity and your career. And like what I can say is definitely get yourself a hype girl. Like they are awesome. My current girlfriend has made herself like Missing Links like apparel, like left and right, and she's just like every time I play a show, she's out in the crowd and be like, ah, oh, it's so good, isn't it? It's like, did you know this is all his original music? And people are like, because they don't know. They see some DJ up there and just like, that could be.
We found
good tunes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. So that's a real thing. I probably lost a ton of relation. There's a ton of time, at least like a year, solid year of my life in like arguing and fighting with.
Just one? Oh, you're doing great.
Yeah,
just 1 year.
I used one particular partner that I was on and off again for like almost seven years. I don't know. I'm just coming to realize like how important that is, having a really solid relationship. Like Dylan will say that sometimes, but he and Nunik have been together for like ever, right?
You know, yeah, she is a real one, that's for sure.
A legitimate, like, you know, reason that he's been as successful as he has been is he's not wasting his time chasing other women, right? He has like a teammate who's reliable and keeps him inspired and happy. Even though she apparently doesn't even like his music that much.
Yeah.
And then in like different circumstances, right? She doesn't like that kind of music.
Yeah. I'm just going to give you a heads up. When you shuffle stuff on your desk, it's kind of loud.
Oh, shit. Okay. Okay.
Is it all in place?
Yeah, the Legos.
It is. I'll try.
All right.
I'm really fidgety, so.
I feel you, man.
I've gotten that feedback before, though. So
my sibling is super fidgety. We've got like a whole bin of STEM toys on the table out in the living room. I had to ask for a bin to be made. Like, can we designate a bucket that we can put all of these things in case I need the table, so it's just not moving 15 weird objects every time I need to eat a meal?
Yeah.
So besides finding a hype girl that is a lifelong addition to your music career and bolsters your music up.
Yeah, easy peasy, right?
Yeah, of course. What else have we not known about since we last spoke?
The Airbnb thing. I built myself a portable DJ setup. That's worth talking about. It all runs on batteries, so it's like it's a pair of sound boxes, right? Which if you haven't like heard sound boxes, they sound so good. Like so good, and they can play forever at super loud volumes on battery. Right? I got recommended them by Nintendo, and like they always exceed my expectations all the time.
That's incredible.
So I got that, and then a mixer that plugs into like this big battery thing, and I can pull all my WAG in, and so or just like play from the back of my truck or whatever. Right, like say in the Red Rocks parking lot or whatever, or in a festival grounds. Right, so that's what I've been doing, and it provides so many opportunities because all you really need to do is play your music for your fans who you haven't made yet. Like figure out where the right people are and then play your music for them. And like the conversion rates are crazy high, and like people will like, I've like made super fans who've like sent, like this one girl, Lynn, she sent me like $50 the other night. I like sent her this mix that I put together, this Dream Tempo mix, and she's like, oh my God, this is so good. Here, I'm going to donate right now. She sent me like $50. Ooh. I mean, I like met her just because like.
That's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's a good mix. Thanks for sending that to me the other day too. That shit was hot.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, reposted on SoundCloud.
Oh, cool. Cool. Thank you. Yeah, it's a good one.
We'll put those links down below.
Sure. Yeah. I kind of like found out that I had like over 4 hours of original music, like when I was going through and I was like setting the bars, like really which tracks am I going to play live, getting them like good enough to play live and other things like that. And I got through it and it's just like, I was just like, oh my God, this is like 60 songs and like 4 hours of music.
Damn.
And so I'm just like trying to even like figure out how I'm going to release this because like I've been producing 12 years, but I've just released my first single like 2 weeks ago or something like that.
Woo!
Right?
Ow!
Respire. Yeah.
So that's another thing we're talking about sometime on this call. Is,
of course.
Release paralysis.
Should talk about that right now because you just mentioned it. So yeah. 12 years producing. You
12
just
years producing.
Released your first single. A, what does that feel like? And B, how did you overcome the 12 years of mental block not releasing to get that one out. Because I know for a fact that has to be hard.
It was. It really was. And there's a few things that led to it, right? Because there was like one period of time when I'm like, you know, I need to get my music out. And then I joined the producer dojo, and like I kind of thought my music was better than it was. And like partly like, you know, Dylan teared it apart, and he'll do that a lot. But he just like teared it apart and like blah, blah, blah. And it kind of got me a little bit of perspective, and I started training really hard. And this was a long time ago, right? Like quite some time ago. And what I had kind of unintentionally done in that process of like accepting his word that my music wasn't ready yet is like, well, I don't know when it's ready. Right. So up until that point, because that was still like years and years and years, a lot of it was not spending enough time in the DAW, not really perfecting my craft. And then like also just, it's easy not to release music. It's easy to just keep producing. It's very easy to just not like go through the extra steps to push it out, market it, etc. But then it was a matter of not knowing that my music was ready yet. And for a while, I was just like, well, I'll just know I'm ready when I get my black belt from the producer dojo, etc. And that seemed like a good idea for a while. And then that presented its own challenges because it's very hard to get in touch with Dylan. And sometimes the turnover things take so long, and he goes from – I don't know. He's always on to a new thing in his own production, right? So mm-hmm. He's always adding that to what he wants you to do with your own music. And so it's like the goalposts move if you don't like turn it over fast enough. Mm-hmm. So like I was just realizing this was like a really bad kind of psychological bottleneck that I had put myself into and sort of being like, oh, Dylan knows best, right? Because like the other thing is like I have a lot of other professionals that I train with, right? Like KJ Saka on the regular, Sidecar Tommy. I've been doing artist development stuff with Jesse, the head of Gravitas. And then, you know, there's like Seth Drake and the whole crew at the Approach Institute. And so I've had a lot of people who are just as qualified to assess whether a track is done or not. Besides Dylan, be like, oh, dude, these tracks are so ready. And so it's, I guess my first piece of advice along this is ask around, right? Because everyone has their own version. And what I've learned is me and Dylan do not like our music like quite the same. Like he makes heavy bass music. Like a lot of myself's a lot more heartfelt. Like I don't like my drum transient slamming quite as hard, right? There's like other things that like are important, but I don't care about. And like, you know, when he has made edits to my song to make them better in his eyes, he's like destroyed kind of the vibe of them because he's in like more of an engineering mode and he's not as paying attention to those things. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, it's gotten to the point where the notes he's given me on my track, I'm just like, I don't know if I want to implement these.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I, you know, and it's just like, well, then I don't know what to do. In terms of like, anyway, so like there's sounds, basically like recognizing like this bottleneck.
Yeah, he knows what's best for him to release on his label for his taste.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And you recognize that those don't necessarily the tastes that you want of how you want to put your music out and what you want to put out and how you want it to sound doesn't necessarily line up with them, and that's fine. And then frees you to not have to wait for that specific approval.
Yes. And there's also the flip side though, is having enough humility to be like, okay, maybe I'm just resistant and there can be wisdom in like what he's saying. Maybe I just don't understand. Right. He gave me last time I sent something to him, he basically said there's too much distortion. You know, you're ruining the fidelity of all of your sounds. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, other things that he offered to do like a session with me to kind of show me. That session hasn't happened even though it's been a couple months. He went to Hawaii, all this stuff. And last time I got back to him and finally got his attention again, he said to send him the tracks again. And I haven't responded yet. But because like the next thing we're supposed to do is have an actual session where he like shows me kind of what he's looking for. Because it may be that he does what he does and it actually sounds way better. Right. And then there's something worth doing and implementing to my music. And it's like, I don't know if he's going to be able to get like results that I think are better. Like, I think my music sounds better than his, and I recognize that's just because my taste is different than his, right? Like, I find a lot of his music's a little dry sometimes, like emotionally, that like the drums are too loud, that like, you know, the mid-range is out of balance, like, but then I'm just realizing that's just because I just would have mixed this down differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like, you know, when there's a departure, like, we of course we think it's better our way, but that's what I'm saying. So I've gotten to this point where I'm like, I'm listening to this, I'm just like, I like how my stuff sounds better than his. And it's at that point I got to realize, if I take too much of his advice, I'm just going to go in that direction, and that's not really what I want. Like, I've done enough ear training now where I've started to be able to discern a lot of these things, like where he was totally right about like so many things about my sound, right? Over the years, so many things and so many breakthroughs. But once you have the ear training, and once you're able to like calibrate these things how you want, then there's a certain point where it's like, well, maybe you want it this way. Like, my buddy K9, he thinks my music, because, like, you know, I just told you, like, Dylan said all these tracks I sent him is like way too distorted, blah, 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 right? And he's like, I don't know if you can hear it on your monitoring system. I'm concerned about your ears, blah, blah, blah. And K9's like, dude, your music's so clean. Like, I like the one that sounds like the speakers are falling apart and like shit's like breaking down, and he just likes broken, dirty ass, like noisy music, right?
Yeah. Right. It's all about taste.
Yeah, it's totally an option. That is totally an option. So I don't know. I think I'm hitting the mark of where I want it to be. I've checked it on all sorts of system, big PAs, like loud as fuck. And myself and everybody I play to like says it sounds amazing. And a lot of the things that Dylan told me were going to be a concern weren't a concern. Right. Mm-hmm. Even when I was like blasting it, that blistering loud volumes. And so, you know, it's, there's also this hands-on, just like experiencing it, like seeing if it's working out in the real world, getting your access to systems that are loud enough where you're going to start testing what it would be like in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was really conferring with others, recognizing about disparate tastes, and being willing to take back my license to be like, my music's ready, right? Because mm-hmm. I'd given it away, and recognizing that I'd given away in the first place. And the flip side is there is something wise to that, right? Like Dunning-Kruger effect, there's my buddy, I'm not going to say his name, but he's been producing for a few years. He's making music. It sounds like music who's from someone who's been producing a couple of years, right? And he's like, I'm telling him something in the back, he's like, and I'm making some comment about how he wants like such and such like headphones and laptop and blah blah blah, so he can just like hear everything. And I'm like, well, yeah, sure, I mean, like, monitoring systems matter, but like, there's still years of ear training like before you can actually hear all the things that's even going on to like really get your stuff sounding as good as it could, or something like that. I was trying to like be judicious about just like, I don't like, if I was saying my real inner monologue and something like, oh man, your mixes are trash, like you've got a lot to learn, but don't worry, or something, whatever. But so like, he's like, no, I'm not like that. Like, I got this head injury and like my brain just works differently and I can already hear everything. And I'm like, okay, well, you've got a lot of mix issues, right? And he's like, no, I have everything sounding like just like I like. And like, it's fine. It's like, if that's true, but like, I too at one point thought my music sounded way better than it did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, way better than it did. And
oh,
like,
yeah. we gas ourselves up, huh?
Yeah.
I need little bit of that.
You have to in the early years to even make it through the sludge.
Survive the long winter ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd rather lie to myself than experience the truth, that painful truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that I have no fans and it's going to be years before it's people even want to be one.
You'll get there too.
Yeah. But yeah, so now I have fans. Now I have people like sending me actually considerable amount of money in the scheme. Like, several months worth of Spotify, like for a mix, like just because they love my music so much. They posted on Facebook, they're like, oh man, did you catch that missing link set at the Wizard? Saw a tent like the other night, like who's sad that their 10 favorite new songs are all unreleased? I'm like, oh man, that's really sweet of them. Right. She's just on her and her partner, they just love like all my music. It's just like their thing, right?
Shouts out to the people that like not only love something, but then like go tell other people and the person whose art they loved that they love it. Like that's so special. Yeah. Shouts out to all those types of fans.
When you don't have a lot of fans yet, that is like the fuel you need. Right, it's like that proof of concept is like there are people out there who are going to be impacted by my music the way that I want to impact people with it. And it may not be like 999 people out of 1,000, but I've seen it happen and I just need to recruit the rest of them. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like that matters so much. Like that really, really matters so much.
Yeah, I think it is important to note that like everyone's feedback from literally anyone at any level, you have to like understand their intent, understand their taste, and then ultimately, like you've said, you've realized you can't let it stop you from finishing the thing. Ultimately, feedback is intended to make the thing a little bit better so that you can finish it. And it is a skill that you really have to dial in. That's hard for myself included, producers to like take feedback on this thing that they made that, you know, you hear the greatness in it. Maybe it's not there. Maybe it almost is, but to get, negative feedback about things you need to change, it's really hard. Right. So
it's so hard, being but okay it's also with, knowing what things to listen to and what things to ignore and to what degree or how to like at least interpret them. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause sometimes like some fans will say something that's like, you should do this to this song. I'm like, I'm not gonna listen to it to tell me to do this song, but then they'll tell me their experience they're having during my song. And that's like, this girl was basically saying, like, I need to make this like 15-minute intro to this song. And I'm just like,
sounds like a festival conversation. Yeah.
Right. But like, she just really likes this vibe and she thinks I'm rushing into the drop too fast. She's just like, the way she started, she's like just getting her groove and she's all like going into this trance, like just grooving it. And she loves it so much. And then the vibe switches on her too early. Right. And then the payout's not good enough because I didn't like milk it long enough. Now, me, I like my music like moving quickly. Right. But like, in the right circumstances, maybe she's right. Maybe I do need to like double the length of that A section just so people can really like go deep before I switched on them. Mm. Right. And like understanding at least like that was her experience and like having nothing, like none of the producer talk and stuff. It's just like, this is what fans experience when they're listening to music. That's like so valuable too. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know what's feasible. They have like really poor conceptions of time and like often have like ideas that don't make sense or you definitely wouldn't want to do, but like their experience is like kind of the most valid thing.
Yeah. And it's their true experience and it's true for them and remembering that, but it doesn't have to be true for you. Most people have heard of the Four Agreements. They came out with the sequel book to that, the Fifth Agreement, that I read this year. And kind of the main point of the Fifth Agreement is like, be skeptical, but learn to listen. Like everybody has a story of how the world is to them. And none of the stories that anybody have are the truth about the world, but it is their artistic take on the world. And we can listen to anyone without taking it wholesale, without taking the entire thing and be like, oh, this is the truth that I need to know. You can listen to it. And if any pieces of it feel right for you, you can choose to take pieces along. And it sounds like that's right where you're at.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, like I said, it's complicated to figure out what to listen to, what to ignore, and then when you are listening, how to even interpret those things, like what to take and how to take them. Mm-hmm. And that's like one of the long-term skills I think you develop as any kind of artist is you know, who are you listening to and like, what are they saying and how should I even interpret this? And what does this mean for my art?
Yeah. So now that you've bridged that gap and.
Well, cause there's a couple more things of this gap worth talking about, right? Cause you asked one, like, how does it feel? But also before we get there, right. So I got back my own license to be like, yeah, I can totally release and call my music done when I say it's done. Right. And I can just do this. Right. But then there's still all these psychological barriers. Like, cause I had also convinced myself, it's like, no, I don't have any of these like mental blocks. I could just release myself. But then I like realized this one, I'd get my license away. And two, as I'm starting to do these last couple of steps, like little tiny things, it's like pulling teeth, like every little step of the way, things I know how to do. And I'm just like, I could do this. I'm just like sitting there and like, there's like this part of me I'm not letting be conscious, but I like feel my like anxiety and my like conscious rise. It's like, you know, shaking briefly. And I'm like, oh my God, but, like this has been under the surface the whole time, right? This like fear of putting myself out there, like these next steps of like, now I'm responsible for the marketing. Now I have to be like, as much of a public figure as I could kind of make myself in a certain way, like for the purpose of my art getting out there. And so, yeah, just slogging through each of those step by step by step. But eventually you're just done, right? And there are a couple things that have changed about the song and it's gone, it's done, which is nice. But like, I mean, it feels so good, right? It like, feels better than losing my virginity in a way. It feels like a bigger accomplishment. But like equally like no longer has pent up, right? So to speak.
It's a good way to put it.
yeah. Like so energy's flowing and I did a little bit of effort marketing, but I need to get back to releasing it. I did the math that if I try and release all these songs, so many of them are different friends' favorites and they all want them. So it's like, I kind of want to release at least the vast majority of them. But if I release a track every 2 weeks, it would take me like 2 years or 2.5 years to do. Right. So it's just like, I don't know. I got to figure out how I want to chunk them together, which ones definitely need to get out. Like how much artwork am I going to do? Like how much promotion on each thing am I going to do? Like, it's just like, because I've been producing so much music for so long, I've accumulated like almost like 6 albums worth of like tracks, right? Or something. Like 5 albums worth of tracks. So that by itself is like, now I've like shot myself in the foot, right? Because it's like this huge mountain of work like in front of me.
Sounds like one of them good problems. I just have too much ready, dope music that people love to release. Yeah. Man, I pity you deeply.
Don't
say that. Yeah, like honestly, like, most of it needs probably a couple hours of work, like, and then like a proper like cleaning up session, just makes just not like any like clicks or pops or like, you know, so like most of them, like there's like a short list that I could do very rapidly to get it in shape. Like very few of the tracks need like more than a couple hours, and then like most of them need some like something. And when I play them live, like I'm like fixing little things in the EQing and stuff. Like, it's just like, I know these like drums here are too harsh or like whatever. Like, I know that this is too, like the bass is too extreme here and just needs to be chilled out at this section. So I'll like do that live, but like, I do need to do some of these things as I finish it too. So I've learned not to think about all the work. Like, I just completely ignore the giant fucking mountain of infinite work in front of me. I just get in the studio every day and just start working at it. I sequence things a little bit. Like, I'm just like, okay, this is what I'm doing next. But the rest of it, I'm just like, it's just stressful.
Organized chaos.
Got to eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't even
the never-ending elephant.
To-do lists hardly for my songs anymore. Like, it needs this, this, and this. Like, when I'm listening through, I'm just like, I like it, just ignore all the things like, oh, I should do this. I just like ignore it all because I'm just like, it stresses me out once it gets more than like 3 things. Right. It's like turns into 50 things. I'm like, I can do 50 things sometimes in like an hour. Right. But like when you feel like 50 things, it just feels like it's impossible, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that, man. It's that kind of analysis paralysis.
Yeah, like I don't make to-do lists for my tracks. I'm just like, I'm just going to get in there and I'm going to make it better till it's done. And I trust my ears to hear what needs to get done. Like every now and then, like I'll make a little note for myself. It's like, oh, like make the fills better or something. Right. But I try and keep it like really like one thing that could be like 30 things or whatever. Just like, don't forget to like work on the fills. Like I just try and like more of like a reminder than like any lists, because like also a lot of times like things you think you need to do, once you solve some other thing, like you no longer need to do that one thing. Because it's like, it's cool here, so you don't need to worry about making it cool here, because it is, like, it's cool enough, like, during that whole section or whatever, you know? So, and I've just learned to, like, not do that. I've gotten good at this overall sequencing of my production, like, the writing process from start to finish, but I've noticed that I just get stressed out if I have too many things in my to-do list, or if I make a to-do list, kind of.
Managing your own mental health in this process of having like an endless mountain of work is so important, like learning those things. And everybody's brain is different, so like another person could hear that and be like, it would stress me out not to have a to-do list. And if you're that person listening, okay, cool, just like we're learning, like take the advice that works for you personally.
What I do, because I didn't give myself enough credit for how much I was getting done, is I do keep track of how many good hours of work I do, and I celebrate everything that I get done. I used to do this explicitly, like in my Miro, just like this note-taking, like mind map thing. I used to keep track of like every like half hour of work that I got done, like I do with like Pomodoro timers and stuff. And but I don't do that anymore, because it's just like I've gotten so in the habit of just being in the studio and like really like working so much and like celebrating myself as I work, that like the celebration, like the energy is just, there's so much more energy when you're like excited about what you're accomplishing than when you're stressed out about what you're not accomplishing. And I'm never going to do more than I do, like in the amount of time. If I can, like, all I need to focus on is how many hours I'm doing it and am I focusing on the right things.
Damn, that's a good way to put it. You're never going to do more than you're going to do.
Yeah.
So why stress about it?
Do as many hours as I can do on approximately the most urgent and important things, right? Like, not the bullshit that I can waste my time endlessly on.
I was going to say, celebrating those small wins, like just the fact that you showed up for this many hours today, the fact that you got this draft done, even if the song's not done, like you printed a new draft, like the little things, that's important.
If I get in Ableton at all and get any amount of progress done on a track, I consider it a victory, right? Like, sometimes, like, that's all you need is, like, the last thing you want to do is train your brain that you go into Ableton, you accomplish something, and you beat yourself up for it because it wasn't enough, right? Like, then you're just going to be like, oh, what if I go in there again and it's not enough, right? That way, if I ever open Ableton, I ever accomplish anything at all, it's like a victory. That's a victory. Like, I won that day. And, like, obviously, you know, it's good to stay in the zone. But, like, I really try and measure up from zero, and it's all, like, bonus points upwards from nothing.
Amen.
Right? Yeah.
I like that a lot. During the pandemic. During the pandemic, I got really like lost in my days. Like every single day of sitting at home was the same, even though I was doing stuff, it didn't feel like it. So I started this practice of like, I got, you know, like a free calendar mailed to me because I donated to something once, and I hung it on my wall, and I just started every day before I went to bed, I would like fill the little box with stuff I'm glad I did today. Even if it was like take a nap or like do yoga or like take a walk by the lake, like even little things that, you know, or, you know, and sometimes it'd be like, finish that track, record the podcast, whatever, like anything I did that I was glad I did that I could think of before I went to bed. And then I look back at the month, like, I kicked ass. I'm doing great. I feel good about myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I did that for like almost 2 years. And then this year I took a big trip and we looked at that blank month and was like, nah, I'm not trying to figure that all out. I quit this habit.
Yeah, I hear you. I was doing the same thing and I quit But I was just looking back the other day, like today or yesterday. Anyways, like yesterday or today, I was like literally looking back at my mural from like 2020 and 2021. And I was like, I did so much stuff. And like, I know I'm getting so much stuff done now, but I'm kind of like, I have like, you know, I keep it all, track of it all, and like this timeline of my life and everything. So I know what I accomplished year by year, what festivals I went to, and I put memories in there. I'm just like, I stopped doing it because it just felt like more homework after a while. But then I'm like looking at it, it's like, that's so rad. And like, I felt so inspired and excited. So I don't know, who knows? I might get back into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amen. And it just like, it doesn't need to be complete. Like, it's okay. It has gaps.
Yeah. You had briefly touched earlier on how you have multiple music mentors that you train with. Yes. I would love for you to dive into that a little more, because you kind of like sprinkled that in there, this little tease.
But yeah,
you dropped some cool names, and I would love to know like what it's been like training with multiple music mentors at once and how that's helped you grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, everyone's got a different specialty, right? So Dylan's very, very technical, like his rack programming and other things like that. Like, he's a very, very clear technical instructor. You know, he's good with sound design and bass music and other things like that. But like, other people are very, very different, right? Like, each of you are different, and like have different things to offer. And so, like, yeah, same thing with everyone else. Like, when I train with Sidecar Tommy, of Beats Antique, he's, everything he says is always based on emotion. Like, he's not technical at all. I mean, like, he has like the skills, but he doesn't mix technically. Like, he would never mix a song starting by doing like these levels and then like, you know, this is 6 decibels below that, this is that. Like, the way that Dylan does it in his like leveling weekly download, he would never ever do that. It would never occur to him to do that, right? You know, because he's making emotional mix decisions. Right, he's like, oh, is this too harsh? Like, is this like romantically warm enough? Like, and does the way that this like sweep in, is that like sufficiently like, you know, like frightening? Right, and that's been amazing, because like, I had gone through the Approach Institute stuff, right, and like Seth is also like, very
sponsor
technical.
The show down below. What's up?
Yeah, yeah. Seth, Approach, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Also quite technical, right? And so just having that completely flip perspective of like, you know, and like Beats Antique music sounds great, right? Sidecar Tommy's music sounds great.
Seth Drake mixes and masters it.
Yeah, that's also true. He is known to do that. But like, yeah, like I'm saying, it's all, you know, so it's very, very different. And I also trained with KJ Saka. And, you know, one of the first things we did is we spent like a long time on drums and other stuff like that and like other stuff. But a lot of what we've spent the last while on has been more about like coaching and career coaching and like other professional things. And like, he has like, he's worked with so many artists in so many different circumstances, because he's been a drummer, he's been on like, you know, stage at Red Rocks with multiple people, like tour with all these bands, like he's seen so many different sides, and he's like, you know, seen and like been part of so many different artists' workflow, right, that he's got like a lot of valuable information to give there. He's like an amazing cheerleader. Like, he always makes me feel great about my music, which I cannot say the same for Dylan.
Like, you need that in a coach. Like, you need equal parts harsh and equal parts build you up, because it, like, yeah, like it can be tough.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, and so, yeah, so basically, like, different people are going to have different things to offer, and it's partly like what you need at any given moment. Like, the Approach stuff, like, that was so valuable, like, even to my composition, right? Like, starting like doing mixed stuff earlier so that like one, things are working and you know how far like your sounds are going to carry you, and like starting with good building blocks that you know are going to carry you through the composition, like all these things that you learn through all the mixing and like his approach to mixing, like just change the game for me compositionally, right? One of the things, like, you know, Dylan always teaches composer mixes, right? But if you really get good at mixing, you really study mixing and stuff, then you can do that way better, right? Because you have like a deeper sense of like, oh, how am I going to build out this frame, you know, in the stereo width and everything, like as I go along and balance it, like the frequency responses and like the taming of everything, like along the way, so that like you don't have to do it later when it's a clusterfuck or like, you know, when you're not sure where things are coming from. It's just, it makes life so much easier, and then your actual mix down sessions are like so fast because it's like, well, it's actually pretty good already, you know.
Yeah, we have a saying that gets thrown around on this podcast a lot, and that is the best sounding mix down you'll ever do also was the easiest. And it's not because you're just automatically a wizard on this one. It's because the things you chose intentionally or unintentionally to start the song with, the building blocks, they're all in the right register, frequency spectrum. They're all working good together. And you don't have to break out a sledgehammer to make this thing fit. You could just, you know, use some 100 grit sandpaper and just kind of, yeah, okay, now those fit. Great. Yeah.
Yeah, that is so true. And then also like getting there more efficiently, like I've also, along with some stuff Dylan's been teaching about using wave shapers and everything, I've had some videos on my channels for years about that, but like that more and more is becoming like my life, of just like getting like, not like, I use fewer and fewer compressors and fewer EQs, it seems, and I just like get the waves to be right in the first place. And I'm like, I do use EQs and dynamic EQs and compressors and all that stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, but like a little bit of wave shaping and just like shaping it just the right way, it goes like a long ways to get all those things.
Yeah. So I think that's also one of the most beautiful things about production to me, is that just like you were saying, like, all these different top level artists have a completely separate style on how to get to their final product. There's also completely different ways to approach your tool set to get to that final product as well. You know, you could hard clip limit, or you could compress, or you could, you know, there's so many options. You wave shape, like, and that's just for like one small microcosm of what you wanted to do, right? And all of those things kind of naturally shape the sound of what you're doing. And also it's kind of cool that, like, I know at least for myself, I'll find myself like a period of time, I will lean into a certain set of tools or a certain way of doing this particular intended result. And it will like shape the sound of those few records or whatever. And I just think that's really cool that it like leaves all of these artistic decisions, in which there is no necessary right way, can lead you to the same place and, like, you know, kind of build upon your sound and how you do things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my workflow is so different, but my sound actually isn't that much different in certain ways. Like, I mean, I execute on it better, but it's like I used to use a lot more compressors, a lot more EQ, a lot more other things, but
that's what it's all about though, right?
Yeah,
like you find your thing and then you figure out how to get the most, you know, distilled version of that.
Yeah definitely.
So what was it like working with KJ Saka?
I mean, I still work with KJ Saka.
Yeah.
It's I mean, I would recommend him to everyone. I don't know how many slots he has, but he's totally worth working with. He's amazing. Like I said, he's an amazing cheerleader. His drum programming is just so good. Like, the way he listens to drums and like just like thinks about them, like, I don't know, like I get compliments on my drums all the time these days, and like he's a large reason why like they're as on point as they've gotten. And he, I mean, he's a master. He's a freaking master of his craft. I don't know what else to say. And like, it's just, he's, yeah, he's just, he's freaking hilarious. And he's just like, he's so kind and he's so warm and he's so like, you know, like I said, he's had all these diversified experiences. So he's like, always got really valuable wisdom to share basically anything. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I get all the goodies first, right? Like, you just put out this course, Your Brain on Drums, and I get like early access to things and like sample packs and stuff like that, which is really nice. He gave me the WAV file, so he has these tracks that help do like drum covers to like drum and bass songs and like drum step and like other things like that. And they'll have like a drums only version, so it's just the drums. I'll put those out on YouTube and TikTok and stuff. But he gave me the WAV file for it, you know, that's like peaking at like zero or whatever. And I made this Balinese drum and bass track out of it and like other things. And it's like, I spent like probably 5 hours on this thing. It slams so hard. Cause he'll do like filter sweeps, like all these effects on the drums and stuff as he's like just like crushing it like a madman, right? And just like all the builds are there, all like the fills are there, right? All like the energy contours of like the whole track, and it's just like drums, right? And I'm like, okay, so I'm just gonna like, I mean, I changed it a lot because like wrote to this, and I'm like, okay, now I'm gonna make some halftime section, and I did all this audio editing, and it's like got this triplet vibe, it's completely different, but like it just came out so fast, right? So I don't know, I'm like, I use the drums all the time, so just like having that kind of access is really, really nice. And that kind of training, whereas like, you know, I've like, I use his drums all the time, his drum shots, his drum loops, doesn't matter. I can use them all the time, because I love them. And so being able to get trained to be able to create that sound myself if I want, like all those things. Yeah, I couldn't be more happy. Like he's my favorite. I don't know. I like favorites. Like he's the one I've been training most consistently with for the longest. Let's put it that way.
All right. Big shouts to KJ Saka.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, man, it's cool working with people because, like, one thing I found is all those times when I was staying up late at night or at work, you know, listening to tutorials or whatever, all those times when I was nerding out on that thing that I thought would be the thing year 4 into producing, that thing that I thought would be the thing year 7 into producing, somebody else thought it was some other thing, and they put all their eggs in that basket and they nerded out about this aspect, like singing delivery, while one person focused on mix downs, while one person focused on sound design, while one person focused on effects, all this stuff. And then you work with these people, and like to them, something that's so second nature with like effects maybe is like just groundbreaking, because you're like, damn, I thought like LFOs and like adjusting my filters better and stuff when I sound design would be the thing that takes my drops to the next level. But it's actually like these background effects or whatever other thing that ends up being. And it's like there's just not enough time to cover every topic in depth as the ones that you do get around to covering. And, you know, chances are maybe you focused on some that aren't really that important in the grand scheme of things, and maybe they're cool, but when you really lock in with somebody else and you see where their mind's at, what they find cool, it just totally shakes up your world. And like, it's really grounded me personally. I'm sure you can also relate with that, like given the high talent you're working with.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like I need to know everything. So I've definitely learned a bunch of stuff that I was not as high yielding as like other things. I don't know. I'm like, mixing is so important. Like we talked about that a little bit. Sound design is pretty important. I've gotten to be a pretty good sound designer at least by this point, but like there's some people out there, it's crazy, right? But you know, getting good enough, I think, matters. Music theory, you don't need to like know all the jazz theory, but at least like, you know, knowing your chords by number and like getting like what I think about is like a personal relationship with like the seven primary chords, like the one chord, two chord, like that, and like also rhythm theory and like scales and stuff like that. Modes could be nice, but that's not even necessary. But like besides that, like also improvising every day, that's like the highest yielding thing I can tell anybody, is improvising on keys every single day. Even if you've never done it, right? Just like, it doesn't have to be keys, but as a producer, it's kind of super high yielding. But like, because you can just hash out ideas so fast, right? You get like cut through, and then like those are the highest yielding things. But there's a lot. Like I learned how to like program Max devices. That's totally unnecessary, right? Like,
it's all cool. It's just if you're, you know, if your goal is to be an artist, then you should be looking even at how do I outsource mixing, mastering, and all this other shit so I could just write. Like, it's cool if you want to go down the Max for Live rabbit hole or other tangents, but I've done a lot of stuff like that, which in retrospect was like, it was like cool for satisfying the nerdery inside, but not practical for a career per se.
I think you can outsource mixing, but I don't think you should not learn to mix.
Of course.
You should be like pretty able to get like a professional-ish mix. It's still going to take a minute, but it's just, it makes you make such better compositional decisions.
I just mean it was so like mind-opening to me to learn that like Diplo doesn't mix his own shit. And it's he has a bunch of his greatest stuff, but he's in a position where he's decided, I just want to create stuff and travel the world and do whatever. And I don't know. It's cool. Like you don't always realize that's an option, especially earlier on. It feels like everybody's doing everything on their own and they're dropping every week, mixing, mastering, producing everything all on their own. Nobody helping them, nothing. Yeah. And
in the snow, uphill both ways back in my day.
I've also been producing other people's music too. So I'm not just a music fan. I've been producing for this, she calls it Witch Jazz. It's Koi Lim and the Hollow Band. Okay, it's cool. Like, sounds cool. Yeah, so I don't know. I love it so much, the production, but like you do get spread so thin so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you choose how to manage your time between all the possible projects, between learning and producing, between writing and mixing, between working on your shit and other people's shit?
Probably poorly.
Always poorly.
No, I mean, like,
no matter who you are.
You know what? Okay. So you know what Andrew Wong said in one of his videos, of all people, what Andrew Wong said is that basically everything he does and has put out has basically been procrastination, like something he's done to procrastinate on what he's really supposed to work on. And I'm just like, there's like a point where he's putting out 100 songs and tracks or like end videos and stuff a year, and he's so productive and prolific. And he's talking about like most of it is really just procrastinating on like other stuff. And it's like, if you have the right types of procrastination, you can build a whole career out of procrastinating on your other one.
That is brilliant though, because his procrastination is so perfected that he completes the motion.
Yeah.
Every time he procrastinates, he finishes the video and then uploads that. So it didn't look like he was procrastinating because there's another thing up. But yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, I guess that all goes back to the critical skill of being able to finish the thing, even if you're procrastinating on the other thing, being able to finish.
When I was procrastinating releasing music, I was procrastinating by learning sound design and learning mixing and like perfecting my craft, right? And like indulging in perfectionism, right? Which isn't the best thing, but it will definitely get you better if you put in the work, right? Mm-hmm. So I have the habit of being productive, trying to be productive with all my time, like all the time, basically, if I can. And sometimes it's like chilling the fuck out and then like knowing to turn off my brain right then and not work. And that's the most productive thing, but like just being deliberate and being like, how should I use my time? And then I run up against the things that I really ought to do. And then I'm like, there's mental blocks sometimes in terms of doing them. And as I slowly dissolve these mental blocks and I've become much more free and able to actually get the right thing done all the time, leading up to that point was years of procrastinating, learning to do terribly useful things in the realm of music, right? And so, you know, yeah, 12 years later, I have just released my first single, but at least it's a good one.
Amen.
Is that funny? It is, but it's like it's not even in my top five that I want to release. It's like, for me, it's like maybe number 10 of like the ones that I had.
It's another good problem to have.
Yeah, right. I put it out first because I wasn't precious about it. It's like, I don't really care about this track that much. Right?
Well, the day it came out, I bumped it 4 times and started a song radio off it on Spotify and then made a whole playlist with it and then a whole bunch of the songs that Spotify recommended. That is my new jam. So
awesome.
Just saying.
You. No, thank you. I'm
looking forward to the next shit. If this is if this is the okay shit you're leading with, so that you have room to ramp up, I am here for this ramp, sir.
Check the summer solstice mix on my SoundCloud. There's a couple tracks. Abraham, that one on there is fucking massive. Like, I mean, there's a bunch of them. Razzle Dazzle is a fun one. That one's pretty. I don't know if I'd put that in my top five, but like, I don't know. If you're looking for heavier music, the Dream Tempo one has like most all of my like favorite more mid-tempo and like chiller musics as well. But yeah, Abraham on the Summer Solstice mix, that's the most massive track I've made yet.
All right, both those mixes are gonna be right down below in the episode notes, humans, along with links to Snake Charmer, and we're gonna put that on the Human Music Song of the Week Spotify playlist. It'll be right at the top when this episode drops.
Yay.
Make sure to go follow this guy, Missing Links.
Yes, please.
Definitely follow him on your favorite streaming, and then like your second and third favorite streaming as well. At least your whole top five.
Yeah, all five.
Yeah. Yo, anything else you want to tell to people? You want to, you know, any last plugs or...
I don't think about any last plugs. Keep at it. Be easy on yourself. Give yourself space for grace. And just keep figuring out ways to free up more of your time to stay focused on your genius. Yeah.
Amen.
Woo! Woo! Man, what a great episode. And definitely great to catch up and see kind of where you've been mentally, like, see... The difference in kind of mindset of where you're at is it's cool, man. Like, I definitely remember after our first conversation, a lot of shit that you said really resonated with me and stuck with me, and I think about that since our conversation. So to see where you're at currently is super cool, and yeah, the tune super dope, and I'm excited for your future success, man.
Pretty good.
It's inevitable.
Thank you. I'm feeling it. I don't know, because like there's also, I don't know, like Closey's playing Red Rocks coming up soon, and like people compare my music to hers a lot, and just like taking these sound boxes into the lots and just like playing and blasting it, right? Like all this, like it's like that has been the best way I've found to like develop good fans.
Yeah,
is just get your sound actually blasting to them where they are.
Yeah. Do you have stickers?
Yes, I do. Hold on and check it. They're QR codes.
Ooh.
Beauty.
And like, if you look really careful there, it's like talks about the genres and stuff that I make. So I was like, how do I fucking do this? Because I make like all these different genres, like of all these different varieties.
Dude, that design is so cool too.
Yeah.
I like, it's not like a traditional QR.
Yeah, no, it's like I made it at QR Monkey. And so it's like, actually, if you can see... Here, let me turn on the bright lights really quick.
Woo!
That's cool.
Looked like your house just exploded.
The other thing is, check it. My friend Laura McGowan, she's like kind of a famous painter. She made me this custom Missing Links logo.
Whoa.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, like you see like the pyramid like scape and stuff in there. And like she's going to do more work to it and such. But like...
Gorgeous.
Yeah, it's so rad. But yeah, if you can see, it's like it's like basically goes from blue to purple. That's like kind of missing. And this is like a kind of more a plum. And but QR Monkey is like you can do the gradients. You can do like the eyes, like different kind of eyes, different types of like the boxes around the eyes. Right. And then the data, all the data being filled in differently. If you let me share my screen, I'll show you, like, I made like 10 different ones.
Let's see now.
Dropbox, Boombox Crush Graphics, missing links. That's me. Share screen. But yeah, it was.
Can you share a screen? Yeah, you're already there. Cool.
Yes, cool. Right, so I made bunches of these, right? They've got like different. This is paint. Let me do it in PhotoViewer. Open with. There we go.
And do all of these, so for people that can't see, it's basically like a QR code that has like a very, very different looking inside structure where like it's not just like square edges and stuff's rounded off and whatnot. Do all of these just, you know, classic, you pull out your camera and they all scan the same?
Yeah, you can just scan them. They work perfectly fine. Sick. Well, I made one for Laura McGowan too.
Yeah, those definitely look super cool.
Man,
yeah, I love that. The color gradients on there too. Yeah, yeah. Jinx.
Yeah,
so that one's crazy. And then, I can see that on a big, what are those things called? The, not a pashmina.
This is where I ended up.
What's the thing called that you have, Luke, on your ceiling?
The thing is,
Tapestry.
People will not know that it's a QR code necessarily. Some people will be like, oh shit, that's a really cool QR code or whatever. A lot of people will be like, no idea that it's a QR code because they expect like something just like black and white and boxes and stuff. So that's why I put the scan me on here. And then I use that as an opportunity to, like I said, put all these genres I make, because like sometimes I'll do like funky, like brassy stuff. And sometimes it'll be like weird evil monster musics and like whatever.
Eclectic sets anyways.
Yeah, me too. And that go all over the place. You never know what you're gonna get next. Yeah.
Yeah. So
sick. That's it. Took like no time. It like takes like, honestly, it's so easy. QR Monkey, that's the best one I found. And then the trick is, instead of entering a URL, because when you generate it, the URL it takes you to will be theirs unless you like pay or whatever. But if you just enter text and do the URL you want, then it'll, when it generates the preview image, it will be a working QR code. But the other thing is also have fewer data points, because like whatever it does, there's like more data. And I personally like it when there's as few data points as possible. I just think it's more elegant.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then I did that PS print that I think you recommended.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, they make killer stickers for super cheap. Final coating makes the fucking ever.
The resolution is super nice. Like, I was just like, the last stuff that I got done, I'm like, I can't. I just wasted money on this shit. It's like so bad. It's like all like grainy, all like there's like the blacks melted off into browns on all the white, and I'm just like, I can't. But these were great and at half the price of everybody else. So,
amen.
Yeah,
that was really cool. Shouts out to QR Monkey and PS Print.
Yeah.
All right. What socials do you want people to follow you on?
I mean, Instagram, TikTok, I guess, is where I need the most traction. You can also get at me at missinglinks.us is the easiest place to find me. You can get all the everything there.
Lit. All right.
Yeah.
Let the people know.
Yeah. All right. Where the sticker takes you is to the missing links.
Hey, yeah, the website, man. They are not dead. They are a great place to send people to get everything you do.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, all right. The way we finish it out is give them a piece.
Peace.
And peace among worlds.
Just do it, Morty.
I like it.
All right, humans. Thank you so much again for being here with us and Missing Links. Make sure to go find him at missinglinks.us or on Instagram at missinglinksmusic. Those links are down below, along with links to his song of the week, Snake Charmer, new single. You can find that on the Spotify Song of the Week playlist as well. And you can find his SoundCloud DJ mixes that we got links to down below, along with our sponsors. Shouts to Dojo TV. That's where we recorded this one live. You could have been in the chat with us. And there's also a ton of other great classes from the other producer Dojo Senseis. Also, our boy Tesco's got a Patreon now. And you can get access to his Discord, track feedback, private lessons, project files, tons more. And the weekly download, where you can learn from Ill Gates and his private weekly group lessons and get access to over 250 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. And guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. Hit up thehumanmusicpodcast.com for more episodes, socials, free sound packs, and such. And peace till next week, humans. Peace among worlds.